Welcome to Ekhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI.
Welcome back. Today we're diving into Zadie Smith's 2023 novel, The Fraud. It's quite a book. Smith, of course, she's such a major voice. We know her for brilliant social commentary, that mastery of multicultural London, especially since White Teeth.
Yeah, absolutely. Which makes The Fraud so interesting, doesn't it? Because it's her first really significant step into historical fiction. She takes us straight into Victorian England. We're talking the 1860s, 1870s.
And right into the heart of this national obsession. The Tichborne trial.
Oh, I was huge. One of the longest, most talked about legal battles in British history. It consumed everyone.
Exactly. So our goal today really is to explore how Smith uses this specific massive Victorian scandal, you know, the whole business with Arthur Wharton, the claimants man, not just as a backdrop, but, well, as a lens, a really sharp one.
To look at things that still resonate, right? Identity, truth, what even is truth?
And crucially, I think, the parts of history that often get left out. Specifically, the connections to the British Empire.
It's a fantastic setup. So the core story revolves around this guy, Arthur Wharton. He's described as a pretty coarse butcher from Australia. And he shows up in England claiming he's Sir Roger Tichborne.
The heir to this massive fortune, who everyone thought died in a shipwreck years earlier.
Precisely. And the whole country just goes wild. People take sides, very much along class lines. Is he the real deal, the lost aristocrat? Or is he just this incredibly bold fraud?
And Smith, she seems less interested in definitively answering if he's a fraud. I mean, history tells us he was, but more in why so many people wanted to believe him. What did that say about Victorian society?
And to help us navigate all this, we get our main character, our narrative filter, Mrs. Eliza Tichet. She's brilliant, a really sharp, quite witty Scottish housekeeper.
Right, and she lives in the household of William Ainsworth. He's her cousin by marriage.
And Ainsworth himself is a fascinating character. He was a hugely popular historical novelist back in the day.
Like Dickens level popular, apparently.
Yeah, but his star is definitely fading by this point. And Eliza is sort of managing his chaotic life, his legacy.
Her own position is so.
Yeah.
Well, ambiguous, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's intelligent, educated, clearly more than just a servant.
Definitely. She handles correspondence, deals with publishers.
But she's completely dependent financially. Not really free. She's sort of stuck in this liminal space.
Which makes her the perfect observer, doesn't it? Slightly detached, deeply skeptical. She sees the whole thing with a critical eye.
And that skepticism extends to Ainsworth, too, right? Huh? You mentioned he's a novelist.
Yes, and Smith draws this great parallel. Ainsworth is almost a literary fraud himself. His fame was built on these historical novels that were, well, pretty shallow. Romanticized history, often just plain inaccurate.
Entertainment over accuracy. Kind of like the Tichborne case itself, maybe?
Exactly like that. His decline sort of mirrors the public's hunger for a good story, a compelling lie rather than, you know, messy reality. Ainsworth knew how to put on a show.
So the novel's really asking us, right from the start, what is truth? Who gets to decide what's real? Whose story matters?
That's the core tension. Authenticity versus performance. And Eliza, she's searching for something genuinely authentic in this world full of, well, frauds.
Okay, so how does she first engage with the Tichborne trial itself?
Well, initially, it seems like sheer curiosity, maybe a bit morbid. She sees it as this giant public spectacle, a kind of theater.
The courtroom as performance art.
Pretty much. Legal facts seem less important than the social drama playing out. Class warfare, national identity, all being bedated through this one man's claim.
And Eliza's just watching, observing from a distance.
Yes. At first, she's managing Ainsworth's messy household, critiquing everything from her sort of safe intellectual perch. Her skepticism is like a shield.
You could almost picture her rolling her eyes at the whole circus.
Absolutely. The claimant himself is pretty unrefined, forgets details about his supposed aristocratic past, yet huge swaths of the working class champion him. He represents this fantasy of overturning the established order.
But then things shift, don't they? The novel doesn't just stay in that satirical space.
No, there's a crucial turning point. Amidst all the noise and the absurdity of the trial testimonies, a different kind of figure appears. Andrew Bogle.
Andrew Bogle. Tell us about him.
He's a black man, formerly enslaved on a sugar plantation in Jamaica called Hopewell, and he takes the stand and testifies for the claimant unequivocally.
He says he knew the real Sir Roger Tichborne back in the day, and that this man, the claimant, is him.
Yes. And his testimony is presented very differently. It's quiet, dignified, unwavering. It doesn't feel like theater.
So this is what breaks through Eliza's cynicism.
It seems to be the first thing that genuinely pierces her armor. She feels like she's encountered something real, an undeniable truth.
Even though he's supporting someone who is almost certainly a fraud, how does that work?
Ah, that's the complexity, isn't it? For Eliza, it's not about the legal facts of the Tichborne inheritance. It's about Bogle's conviction, his personal certainty. His truth feels rooted in lived experience, in a kind of human recognition, not just legal documents or society gossip. It contrasts so sharply with everyone else's performance.
So it's the manner of his truth-telling, the integrity she perceives in him.
Exactly. She senses an authentic narrative there, something that simply was, regardless of whether people believed it or not. And seeing that, seeing Bogle, seems to awaken something in her, a sense of moral purpose that maybe her constrained life hadn't allowed before.
Right. She realizes his story might be the important one, not the Tichborne spectacle.
Precisely. That pivot is really the heart of the novel.
So the trial concludes. The claimant, Arthur Orton, is exposed and convicted. But for Eliza, that's just the beginning.
In a way, yes. The public drama ends, but her personal quest intensifies. She basically drops the Tichborne case from her mind. Her focus shifts entirely onto Andrew Bogle. She decides she needs to find him to write his story.
An act of narrative justice, the outline calls it. Giving voice to someone overlooked.
Yes. And this completely changes the book's focus. We move away from the satire of London society and plunge into the brutal realities of Britain's colonial history. Jamaica. Slavery.
It's a huge shift, geographically, thematically, emotionally.
Definitely. And Bogle's story becomes what Smith terms the authentic narrative. Through his perspective, we're suddenly on the Hopewell Plantation. We're learning about the horrors of the sugar economy, the dehumanization, the violence.
Events like the Baptist War of 1831.
Right, which was this incredibly significant slave rebellion in Jamaica, a fight for freedom against impossible odds. Bogle lived through that history.
And this becomes the true history. The one underpinning everything else.
That's the argument Smith seems to make, that the comfort and wealth of Victorian England, the world Eliza inhabits, was built on this foundation, written, as the phrase goes, in the ledgers of a sugar plantation.
Compared to that, the question of whether Orton was Tichborne, it suddenly seems almost absurdly trivial.
Utterly trivial. Eliza comes to see that her real moral task isn't solving the Tichborne puzzle, but recording Bogle's silenced history, bearing witness.
So the fraud of the title isn't just Orton.
No, it expands. Orton's deception is just one small part of a much bigger system of fraudulence. It's in the social hierarchy, the legal system seeking convenient consensus, not necessarily truth.
And the biggest fraud of all, perhaps, is the sanitized, self-congratulatory story the British Empire told about itself.
Exactly. Ignoring the brutality that built its wealth.
And for Eliza personally, deciding to write Bogle's story, that's her own act of breaking free, isn't it?
It's huge for her. She moves from being useful to Ainsworth, managing his decline, to being useful to herself, claiming her own intellect, her own voice for something that feels profoundly important. It's a quiet but powerful assertion of agency.
It also really throws into relief who gets to tell stories and whose stories are considered important.
Absolutely. The Tichborne case was pure sensation. Media frenzy, books, plays. It generated noise and money. But Bogle's story, the story of survival, resistance, the human cost of empire, that was just a footnote, an inconvenient detail.
We see that today too, don't we? The way certain narratives capture the public imagination while others, often more vital ones, remain unheard.
It forces a reevaluation. We might look back at the Victorians and their Tichborne obsession and feel superior, but the novel pushes us to ask, what are Tichborne cases? What sensational distractions keep us from confronting uncomfortable truths now?
That shift in the reader, from detached amusement at the start to facing the gravity of Bogle's history, that's really powerful.
It shows that real integrity maybe isn't about solving mysteries. It's about the courage to listen to the difficult stories, the ones history tries to bury.
So the fraud isn't just historical fiction as entertainment. It's using the past to challenge how we construct history itself, how we choose what to remember and what to forget.
Ultimately, it suggests that finding truth often means seeking out those inconvenient voices, the ones pushed to the margins, and having the moral stamina to actually hear them.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.